Successful Differentiation in the Music Classroom, an interview with Samantha Davis.
Strike up the band so you can give your kids a helping hand. From interviews to teaching tips, you'll add this to your bag of tricks. There's no smarter way to spend your time, so keep it right here with James Devine. The Music Ed Podcast, where you get quick and easy tips on how to be a better band teacher.
Hi, this is James Devine with the Music Ed Podcast, and my guest today is Samantha Davis, and she is the music supervisor in Widefield School District here in Colorado Springs. Samantha, tell us a little bit about your experience and how you kind of got here to where you're at now.
Sure. I have both a bachelor's and a master's degree in vocal music and vocal performance from the University of Arkansas and the University of Oklahoma, and I started my teaching career in teaching 6th grade through 12th grade in a small town in Missouri. Spent 2 years there and 2 years out of the profession, and then moved here in 1996 and began at Harrison High School teaching vocal music, and moved over to Whitefield School District after that, and taught vocal music at pretty much all of the secondary schools in the district, Watson, Sproul, as needed, Watson and Sproul, at Mesa Ridge, doing vocal coaching, and then also spent most of my time at Whitefield High School as the director of vocal music, and then transitioned into music administration, and now I'm full-time music administrator.
Awesome. Sam, I invited you because I saw you were teaching a class here in the College Springs area called Successful Differentiation in the Music Classroom.
Yes.
And I wonder if you could just discuss some of the things that you might be talking about in that class. And I'll be putting up links for people who are in-state or even out-of-state who might be interested in digging deeper in that.
Fantastic.
But maybe if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. The class is going to be designed for current music educators and pre-service music educators to start to get a familiarity with some of the actual language that surrounds special education students. So for a lot of us, we may not have, I know as I was a teacher, and I would every year get a folder full of information from the special education department about our students, I would look at it and go, wow, okay, well, that's great, and not really understand all of the language that was in that to be able to fully implement some of the needs of those students. So we're going to discuss some of the things that happen with ILPs, with ALPs, which is an advanced learning plan, which is pretty new for our music students, but which is coming. We do a lot of ALPs for gifted students in our district in music. I'm very familiar with what the gifted program looks like for our students and what the requirements are for the state. So we'll talk a little bit about that in our class, because it's something that is mandated by the state that we offer, is ways to identify students who are gifted in performing arts, but not many of us know what we're doing with that. And so I have some different offerings for that. We'll talk about what a 504 plan is and what happens, how to read that plan and how to then implement that plan in your music classroom. We'll also spend some time, a great deal of time, just talking about some specific strategies from K-12 that will help our learners, both whether that's our special education students or our gifted students, or anyone on the spectrum from one range to the other. We all spend a lot of time in rehearsals and in the general music classrooms with a diverse group of kids. Maybe you have a grade level elective program in your schools, so you run the great gamut of kids that have special needs, all the way to you're gifted in that class. So we're going to talk about some strategies there, and also do some, basically some brainstorming of how what we already do in our classrooms can be modified to meet the needs of those students.
What are some of the strategies that you have seen implemented, mm-hmm. and you've seen that are successful that people could maybe hear just a little bit
of? You bet. Well, I think some of the some of the strategies that I've seen that have worked very well is taking some of the, for our special needs students, for instance, in the secondary rehearsals, taking some of our materials and rewriting some of our materials to be able to help those students still be a part of the group, but also be, and still being focused on an objective, the same objective as all students, but being able to go at their own pace. As an example of that, I have teachers, and I have seen in national workshops teachers who of strings, who they take the materials that they're going to do for scales and with articulations and the different things that they're going to do with bowings, and they for the warm-ups, and they actually rewrite those so that the special education students can they can play exactly along. Perhaps they're creating harmony with that scale, because what they're really doing is they're focusing on the right, absolute correct fingering and intonation for the tonic of the chord, and they may be really focusing on being able to truly hold their bow correctly, or truly being able to break that skill down. Uh-huh. And they're just playing one note of the scale. And maybe they're only playing a whole note, or they're only playing a half note. But whatever they're doing, they're fitting it in with the other kids so that they're learning at the same time as all of the other students in the class. So that's a kind of an example of how you can modify your current curriculum. With our elementary students, I'm actually going to have a guest with me for one of our classes, one of my elementary teachers who is an amazing, her name is Alyssa Bislow. She teaches at Benetucci Elementary, and she's going to bring in strategies that she uses when she's working with her WISC students, her students that are on the autism spectrum. She does a lot of movement to music and the kind of experiential way of teaching those students, and she's going to bring some of that in to share. So there are just a number of different things that we're going to be doing, also a bit of a round table of what other people have seen to just try to create a toolbox.
Why is this important for music teachers to incorporate these things and incorporate all these learners in their classroom?
Well, I think it's important for every teacher to try to incorporate all learners that come into their door. I think that music has a powerful impact on every human being, and it doesn't matter whether they are what level of a learner they are, if they're at whether that's even a special education student, or if that's a gifted student, or if we're talking about a beginner or an advanced. Every human being responds to music in some way, shape, or form. Sometimes not positively, sometimes it's negatively, but it is an emotional response, and that is what makes us human, and that is what makes us important for the human race. And so I think it's important that we recognize that we are all going to have students, no matter where we are in what we're teaching, that we may not know how to get to a level that they can understand, and or raise things to a level that keeps students interested, which that's the other end of the spectrum, which is our gifted kids. We sometimes have our most incredibly amazing gifted students who don't stay in our programs. They'll go somewhere else because they can do everything we're asking them to do, and we haven't figured out how to differentiate for those kids, and they decide they don't want to do it anymore. They would rather go do something that stimulates their brain in a different way. So it's important to try to be inclusive for all. But for teachers, the importance of trying to make sure that all of us have the same language is that we're often, as music teachers, we're kind of in our own little worlds, if you will, whether we are there of our own creation or the creation of our core teachers, there are assumptions made about what we know and what we don't know, because we are always busy working towards the next performance, or, you know, for any given elementary, they are their own person. There is no one else there for them to collaborate with, maybe the PE teacher if they're lucky. But we are so isolated often that a lot of the language that and a lot of the knowledge that that is just assumed by core teachers and special education teachers and administrators, frankly, that no one should assume. We need to make sure that we are educated in and able to speak the same language. And that's how we continue to be good advocates for ourselves.
So going to the band specifically.
You bet.
What are some strategies maybe for a gifted student to kind of expand what they're learning and make it more interesting for them?
I think there are some things that we can do. I've watched some of our very gifted kids take on the roles of section leaders, and that's kind of an interesting proposition because perhaps they're not showing you their best leadership qualities because they might be bored. But being able to put children in a position to help other kids and to teach other kids, the ones that are really good at communicating how to do that. Being able to offer up ways, you know, to have students take a piece of music and to find new ways, new uses, new. So, you know, looking at our secondary kids who are in band, if they love a particular piece, be that person that does the research about that piece and helps to teach other kids. Maybe they serve as a guest lecturer. When it comes to an ALP process, which is something that we don't necessarily all of us know a lot about in music, but when it comes to an ALP process, students are asked during that time, students and parents, what are your goals? What do you want to do with music? And then being able to work with that music teacher to meet that. So, you know, if a student says, I can play a mean horn, but I really want to be a composer. Well, great. They're still going to continue practicing and doing the things that they would do in your ensemble. Uh-huh. But maybe you give them a little task to, you know, make a little arrangement for a quartet or you're doing something that piques their curiosity for the goal that they want to do and they want to realize with their ALP.
Is that something for the ALP, because that's a term I'm not familiar mm-hmm. with, and is that fairly new, or is that...
It's not new to education, but it's certainly new to us as music educators.
Okay.
ALP, Advanced Learning Plans, have been around as long as ILPs, Individualized Learning Plans, because they are in the same realm. So you have students that are outside of what are considered standard... a standard setting of education, and students have been tested for gifted qualities for as long as testing has happened. I mean, 30, 40 years, and so it's been around a long time. But the state of Colorado, over the course of the last 8 years, has added creativity. The areas of creativity, being able to be gifted in, obviously, in language and in math, but creativity, leadership, performing and visual arts, athletics. So that's something over the course of the last, like I said, it was about 8 years ago when I started that whole process with the state. That was a part of state. It's a part of state law. That we are able to test kids for that. That we start pursuing finding our gifted kids outside of just the normal channels. That we're looking at creativity and the arts and everything else. And so once that started, then districts started to kind of dip their toe in the water of how to do identification. And then ALPs started to become a term that got bandied about as far as we music folk. We've been identifying students in our district for, since that 8-year period started, but we've really honed that process, and our teachers are involved for the most part with the school liaisons, gifted liaisons, in writing ALPs for our music students.
Is that something that's kind of gone by the wayside in some schools? I know personally I've never seen an ALP. I see the ILPs all the time.
It's just not being done very much. It's just, and it will be, and that and there's a huge push to get it to continue that throughout. I mean, to really get that to be something that's throughout the state, and it's consistent between all schools, that everyone is giving given that opportunity to identify kids.
It sounds like a great thing, because you want to find out the kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, you kind of find out these things kind of by accident sometimes.
Sure,
you know, kids who say they want to major in music, or
right,
they really want to conduct, and they'll, if they feel bold enough, sometimes they'll ask, can I conduct a piece? Can
absolutely
I do this?
Absolutely.
And but it would be nice to have it in writing, just like for the ILPs, and
right,
you can say, okay, I can make this adaptation.
Right.
I can make this
exactly
thing
exactly
help the student.
Well, and you know, that what's so interesting about that is that with ALPs, it's so hard to, it's surprising. It's more surprising, as I'm finding, to identify gifted students, because you'll have a lot of students that won't present themselves necessarily in your classes as having that potential to be gifted until you start digging around, because they may be bored. A lot of gifted kids are sometimes in trouble for you. They may be able to just play, and they understand everything you're saying, and they're right, they get it. But they've gotten it, and you're still having to explain it 15 or more times, just for your run of the mill above average musician. But they got it the first time you did, so therefore they're the ones that are kind of messing around for you, and you have to truly isolate behavior from aptitude, and that sometimes can be hard. And that at the early stages of identification, sometimes that becomes a problem, because you see your really great players who are also really great with you 100%. They seem to be your gifted kids, but sometimes they are. But a lot of times they're you've got some that you want to strangle on a daily basis, and they're really way off the chart. They're just bored already.
Wow.
So it's just been an interesting learning curve.
It sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
Now, can you count that for the students who are on an ALP?
Mm-hmm.
Can you count things like All-City Band,
yes, you
All-State
can.
Choir?
It depends on your district and how you set it up. For your district, we do. What we do personally is that we have some lists of options for kids. We offer we actually offer a subsidized with GT money, federal GT money. We offer a subsidized private lesson program in the district for those kids. But in addition to that, and they can choose to do that or not, but in addition to that, you can put in the ALP that students should audition for All City Band, Pikes Peak, Honor Band, for the junior high kids. You can put any of that, push those kids to continue on to making sure they do solo and ensemble. Because that's an individual, they can push themselves individually or as groups, or so you can add even recommendations. You can even recommend that they audition for Youth Symphony, or recommend to the parent that they audition for Children's Chorale. Or so there are some things there that you can put in there that are just, we want to utilize our community resources as much as possible.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Do you have any last words of advice for band teachers who maybe they feel overwhelmed or aren't sure what to do with both ends of this, the
sure,
IRP and ALP?
I think you have to figure out in your school who your resources are. So my first tip would be to always, if you, once at the beginning of the year, or sometimes halfway through the first semester, when you get that list of students and you look at their ILPs, read them. Read the information that's given. Don't just put the information in a file and let it sit there. Make sure you know what it says. Make sure that you understand what students truly are capable of and how far you can push them. Don't limit them by what you think their expectations
uh-huh
are. You make sure that on either side, end of the spectrum, make sure that you see what they can be capable of, and then go find out who their case managers are in the school, and go have those conversations of, I have Joe in band, and I see that I see already that it really is struggling with reading left to right with his, with the on the score, is he, and it looks like he does that in reading, what are some of the exercises that you do, that you're doing for reading, that just help him track left to right? Are there key words that I can use to help him track? Are there, so that constant communication, which indeed truly does mean that we need to know the language. We're communicating in a different language than everybody else. So, but find your resources and start educating yourself about with both their case managers and you know, never be afraid to find a special education teacher in your building and say, I don't know how to do this, and or your gifted liaison, I don't know how to keep this child engaged. They seem to already be ahead. You know, here's what we need to do. What are some suggestions? What are they doing in other classes? It just makes a big difference.
Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with our group.
You bet.
And I hope that we get some people to be able to go to your class and get a little
really
bit more.
I would really love
in depth.
It. And I would just once again, for general music teachers, I'm more of a secondary person, but I do know a lot about what my music teachers do, and Alyssa Bislow being a guest, that's going to be a huge tip. She is an amazing elementary teacher, and she teaches her kids that are on the autism spectrum like I've not ever seen. So
Very
she
cool.
has huge amounts of information that can transfer also into the secondary classroom.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
The Music Ed Podcast, where you get quick and easy tips for how to be a better band.